This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese. It's Technology Day on the program with Iowa State University computer consultant Jeff Ballvance. Changes in the tech world are almost too fast to follow. The Xerox photocopier is 50 years old. Will the Amazon Kindle be around that long? And what about security patches? Will we have to live with these forever? Join us for our live conversation this hour. There's always plenty to talk about, like not even the clouds are safe. Are crooks running the largest cloud computing environment in the world? And is gadget-enabled multitasking so addictive that it might be damaging the economy? Tech Day with Jeff Ballvance on Talk of Iowa begins in 5 minutes following news from Iowa Public Radio and National Public Radio. This is Talk of Iowa for this Thursday. I'm Dennis Reese, and it's Technology Day on the program with Jeff Ballvance, computer consultant at Iowa State University. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning.
Have you seen the Google homepage today?
I have to confess I haven't, but I can imagine that the information technology field has had a very long tradition of April Fool pranks, and I can't imagine that this one would be any different. Those people are good over there.
they really are. Well, anyway, if you go to it, it says Topeka. Topeka has really tried hard to get this new high-speed network that Google is going to be establishing in certain locations, and now Topeka... The city of Topeka is calling itself Google for the day. Anyway, I hope it works out for them.
I'm sure it will.
Okay. Well, we have a lot of things to talk about today. Lots of security updates. It just seems like one right after the other. And I'll mention before we get started with the rundown that we'd love to hear from listeners this hour at 866-780-9100. Or at email is talkofiowa, one word, talkofiowa at iowapublicradio.org, as it's Technology Day on Talk of Iowa. So there's security updates, Jeff, for Apple's QuickTime. I downloaded mine yesterday, and it took about, the one I downloaded yesterday took about 10 minutes on a very fast university internet line to get that going.
But, it is big. It is big. The Windows version, I noticed, was about 48 megabytes. So this is going to be a really long download on somebody's dial-up, I'm afraid. But it's fairly important. The whole business of security updates is a mixed evil. You need to do them because you'll be vulnerable to something, especially something coming off the web, if you don't. We've got... security updates for QuickTime. We've got security updates for Internet Explorer. There's even a security update for Mozilla Firefox. All of these, you know, if you want to stay safe on the net, you're going to need to get these patched.
Okay, and also Adobe Reader updates keep happening. Now, okay, here's my question. You know, every time they say you have to update Adobe Reader, I'm thinking, does it really change that quickly, or is it all security-based concerns for these updates?
A lot of it is security-based. That's really the most important reason. Adobe hasn't changed the nature of the structure of the PDF file that much, although there have been updates in the past few versions, particularly regarding control of what you can do with the PDF that you download. You know, most people don't realize that when you create a PDF, if you have the right tools, you can specify what people can do with it. You can say you can't save this, or you can't print this, or you can't make copies of this. That's built into the PDF standard, but works, you know, only with the most recent versions of Reader.
Yeah, you sent me an article the other day, and I tried everything I could think of to print it, but it just would not let me print it. And I thought, well, there must be a reason for this.
That could be part of it.
Yeah. So we have 10 critical security holes on Internet Explorer, a whole bunch on Mozilla. Firefox. What about Chrome? Has that been pretty safe and secure?
Chrome has been relatively safe, but the trick with Chrome is that it's a new enough application that it keeps evolving. You know, just because of bug fixes and other updates as well as security. But you're right. I haven't seen as many problems with Chrome. The way it handles scripting, I think, is a little bit different.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the worm that I can't pronounce. I'm not really sure how you say it. Is it Conficker?
Most people pronounce it Conficker, yeah.
And where did they come up with that name?
Well, I believe the name itself is in the virus somewhere.
Mm, okay.
It's kind of a messy one. They don't use it in Germany for the reason that it is related to an obscenity in German.
Oh, okay. Well, we won't go there. But this article that you sent me that I couldn't print for whatever reason was sort of disturbing, and it had to do with cloud computing. And the title was "Are Crooks Running the Largest Cloud Computing Environment in the World?" It's pretty disturbing that a number of crooked groups, I guess, in a number of nations are why don't you explain what's happening?
Well, just to start off, you know, cloud computing is computing resources that are distributed through the internet. You use a lot of machines, you put them in a lot of different places, and that way you've sort of distributed your risk, you've distributed the power requirements. The trick is that there are cloud computing resources that are being used for illegal purposes, especially because the people who are providing the resources don't know they're doing it. Many internet worms, Conficker, Mariposa, some of the others, the purpose of them is to take over your machine and allow the criminals running the thing to use the resources. In the case of Conficker, they're using it for a wide variety of purposes. A lot of the spam that you see in your inbox is coming from these kind of machines. If you can't get into one of your favorite web servers, it may be that someone has decided to create what's called a distributed denial of service attack. You simply get 100,000 or 200,000 machines to just start accessing this web server, and that, of course, brings it to its knees because it's not designed for that. There are a lot of things in there. That's what Conficker is all about. It's essentially owned by, it's believed to be a organized crime group possibly in Russia. And they use those for that purpose. They will rent them out to you if you want to spam half the planet, or if you want to take down somebody's web server. That's available for a cost. You know, it's very, very easy to do. All it takes is money and the right connections. To give you an idea, shall we talk a little bit about the size of this cloud computing tool?
Yeah, absolutely.
The numbers came from a presentation that was given at a recent conference on cloud computing, but it's kind of interesting. If you look at Google, the massive search engine, data storage, mail system, they have 500,000 machines, 500,000 machines, running about 1 million processors, okay? The Conficker botnet has 6,400,000 machines at last count. And over 18 million processors. So it's considerably bigger than Google. And Google, as everybody knows, is bigger than everybody. Mm-hmm. Well, almost everybody.
Wow.
It's a little frightening. You know, if they wanted to, you could probably use, you know, if you coaxed out the entire Conficker botnet, you could probably take down the infrastructure of small to medium-sized countries.
Wow. Well, that is truly mind-boggling.
It is a little scary.
There's nobody really to police this sort of thing, is there?
Well, yes, there is. The illegal use of computing equipment like this is covered by the laws in most of the countries, most of the 230 countries that Conficker has been detected in. The trick is figuring out the enforcement. It's how do you trace it back? How do you figure out where it came from? And once it's started, how do you stop it? Because one of the purposes of the botnet is to make the botnet bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you want to stop the spread of this thing, you have to figure out how to stop it on 6,400,000 computers at once.
Right.
Yeah. So it's not trivial.
No. And question about email, you know, you're talking about, we're always told not to open suspicious-looking emails. If there's an email sitting in your spam folder that looks like it's legitimate, but you're not really sure, is there any danger of dragging it over into your normal inbox, not opening it, but just dragging it over to see what happens?
To see what it is?
Yeah.
Well, there's always the danger of opening something. So, yes and no. The nice thing about, I'm not sure about how Outlook handles this, but I know in some many other mail clients like Eudora, there are restrictions on what can be done with the mail in the spam folder. So if you open a mail that message there, your mail client may, for example, prohibit it from displaying pictures and using links. I know the America Online mail client, the AOL mail client, does that. You know, you can't mm-hmm. see the links, you can't go to the links, you can't touch the pictures unless you specifically tell it to.
Okay.
So that may give you an insight on what's in the thing.
Okay. You sent me another article about Mozilla also patching 10 bugs in the older Firefox. Why are some people using version 3.6.2? I guess that's the newest.
Right.
And a lot of people are using the old version 3.0. Why not just automatically, when you go into Firefox, just download the latest edition and so you don't have to worry about it?
Well, as a general rule, when you're talking about major version upgrades like that, it is often something that you can't do automatically,
okay.
especially in the older version. If you're looking at Mozilla 2 or Mozilla or Firefox 2 and Firefox 3.0, it may not be able to overwrite the original one without going through and doing a full install.
Okay.
Now, the 3.5 to 3.6, Mozilla's been working hard on that, and it can actually do that major version upgrade by itself.
Mozilla is a nonprofit organization run by volunteers. Is that still the case?
That is correct. It is still a nonprofit organization. It has corporate sponsorship from a large number of places, but it is still its own foundation. There's a foundation that actually runs the development for the Mozilla products.
And that's probably why a lot of people like it. It's
sure.
There's not a lot to worry about. You know, they're not trying to sell you anything. So.
Right. There's not as much profit motive involved. There are people who truly want to make this a great product and an alternate product to the other browsers out there.
Yeah. And it's still not the leading browser, though. That still has to be Internet Explorer, right?
It's still Internet Explorer, but it's close.
Yeah. Well, we'll take a break, Jeff, and be back in a minute here on Iowa Public Radio's Talk of Iowa. We'll take your calls, again, 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. It's Computer Day on the program with Iowa State computer consultant Jeff Ballvance. You can also email at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. It's 20 past 10. Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese with our computer guy, computer consultant Jeff Ballvance. We'll take your questions and calls about all things tech and computer, 866-780-9100. Let's see. Let's go to an email. Jeff, it's from Annette in Iowa City, and she says, I'm a graphic designer who is looking to purchase a new home computer that will run Adobe Creative Suite products, Photoshop, Illustrator, and InDesign, etc. Many graphics files are very large in size, and I wondered what specs I need to look for when buying a new computer, size, memories, and so forth.
Well, she has a big advantage. She has a specific task that she's looking at. So really the thing to look at is to go grab the Creative Suite information and look at the system requirements for that program. In a general rule, if you're looking at Adobe products, you want as much memory as you can find and as much hard disk as you can afford. They're very any kind of a graphics tool is very memory intensive, very processor intensive. So you know, if you're looking at difference between looking at sharing costs between the cost of the computer, the amount of memory. Memory is very cheap. Go for a lot of memory. Push the CPU up if you can afford it. So get the faster processor, the multiple processors, if you can afford that. The nice thing is that the things that you really need, memory and hard drive space, are very cheap right now. I would say, you know, if you're looking at graphics, you probably will want a terabyte of hard disk space, and that's not that expensive, or more. You know. And if she's going to be, I don't know if she works at home or if she simply wants to take work home, you probably want to invest in a big external hard drive for doing that for the sake of, you know, being able to move files that are very, very large. Look at the size of the files you're working with and how much you want to be able to carry around and paste that. But I would definitely look at an external drive for backup. You definitely want a backup device. And unfortunately, the days when you can back things up to CDs or even DVDs are kind of gone. Things are too big for that, and especially if you're doing, you know, humongous graphics or if you do movies. Or even audio, those take up a lot of space, and optical discs just don't have the space for it anymore.
It sounds like a fun job to be a graphic designer.
It does, and I've tried it, and as a graphic designer, I'm a great computer consultant.
Okay. Great. Here's another email before we get to calls from Jeff in Illinois. I understand that Windows updates are necessary for being protected against web viruses and such. But every update slows Windows down. I know this because on a fresh install of Windows, it's lightning fast. But as the updates install, it just slows down. What can I do about this?
Well, one of the things that may be going on there is that your hard drive is becoming defragmented. I know I just did this on my office machine last night, and it picked up a lot. Basically, what happens is your hard drive gets busted up into little pieces, and it becomes slower and slower to write that information out. Go to the properties of your hard drive, right-click on the drive icon and say Properties, and go to Tools and Defragmentation, and just let it follow the directions and let it defragment the drive, and I think you'll find that it runs quite a bit faster. Now, he's right. Many times, doing a Windows update, doing software updates like this will add stuff, and that is unfortunately kind of unavoidable, but you can go through and look at what's being started up with tools like AutoRuns, for example, that will help you figure out what's happening and whether you need all this stuff running.
Okay. Let's go to our first call. Dan is calling from Webster City. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. I'm having some mysterious emails appear that says I couldn't send a certain email that I never sent. And it appears that, at times of the day when I'm not at home, and I'm just wondering if my computer is compromised somehow. I do have, you know, virus software on it, but what else should I be doing?
Well, one of the things that you should do, if you get a message back that says that you've sent mail that couldn't be delivered and you didn't do it, examine that mail carefully and see if you can figure out where that mail actually came from. And it might be possible for somebody at your email provider to help you with that. Look at the tech support. But you can go back and look through the headers and the message that was sent. Usually they'll send you the full message, including that headers. And you can find out whether or not it really came from your computer. If it didn't, it is very, very easy to spoof an email address, to use someone else's address, and many, many viruses do that, to send mail in somebody else's name to draw attention from themselves. If that's the case, if something, you know, if a botnet has sent mail in your name because it grabbed your address off of a mailing list or off of a website somewhere, then, you know, that's not really a problem for you, other than the fact that people are getting mail that has your address on it that didn't come from you and they probably didn't want to see.
Okay.
However, it is possible that you have something on your machine that is sending mail, and that would be worth looking into.
Well, it appears that it looks like the same type of automatic response I get when, you know, I don't have the current email for someone I send an email to, and it, you know, bounces back to me. So,
unfortunately, those all look pretty much alike. Although if you can trace it to where it was caught, what, you know, exactly where it was, then that would be useful. Is this coming from your internet service provider, or is it coming from somebody else's?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If it's coming from yours, then you might, it is possible that you have a compromise, and you might want to do a full virus scan with whatever tool you have, or a couple of other tools that you can use in case those aren't working.
Okay.
Trend Micro, one of the antivirus companies, makes available an online scanner. It's at housecall.trendmicro.com. Housecall.trendmicro.com. And you can use that tool to identify a wide variety of problems on your machine. And it will, unlike some of the online scanners, Housecall actually will fix it for you. Another tool that will work on almost anything is the AVG Rescue CD. You can get that at free.avg.com. And this is a little more difficult to use. Housecall is really easy because you just click the button and let it install and do stuff. The AVG Rescue CD is for more desperate cases where you get something that's on there, but you can't get it off and you can't figure out why. Many times it has to be removed in a very difficult process, and the Rescue CD makes that really easy because you know, many times Windows will prevent you from removing stuff from your machine. And especially if Windows has been compromised with a rootkit where Windows is actually prevented from seeing the files that need to be removed, this bypasses that by actually starting its own operating system from the CD.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All righty.
Okay. Thanks a lot for that call from Webster City, yeah. Dan. Called from Webster City. Let's take another call before break. We'll go next to Dick in Solon is having some Firefox problems. Dick, good morning.
Hello.
Yes, you're on the program.
Okay. When I try and bring up Mozilla, Firefox, and so forth, it takes me a minute or so to bring it up, and I assume there's something in between there. I have XP and AVG.
Okay. Well, one thing is that Firefox does take longer to load than Internet Explorer. There are a lot of things that are going on there. You might, once you get Firefox up, you might go in and clear the cache, which you'll find, I think, under the preferences.
Okay.
If you clear the cache, that will speed up the rate at which it goes. The cache and everything in Firefox is stored in a database, and that database can get big. If you clear the temporary files, clear the cache in it every so often, that will help.
Okay. I was talking with some of my sons, and they recommended some of these clean up your files and cross files and so forth. Are there any programs out there that you'd recommend for that?
I don't have a good recommendation for that because I've had bad experiences with some of them. You have to be careful not to throw away things that you really want.
Okay, we're out of time for this segment. Dick,
thanks for the call.
Appreciate it. We're going to take a break for about 5 minutes. Be back with Jeff Ballvance, computer consultant on Tech Day on Talk of Iowa, 866-780-9100, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Welcome back to Talk of Iowa. I'm Dennis Reese with Iowa State computer consultant Jeff Ballvance. And Jeff, we have calls and emails coming in, and we might as well get right to work.
Okay.
That's always a good idea, right? Let's go to Jeff in Ventura. Good morning, Jeff.
Hi, guys. I was wondering, Microsoft is going to drop their Windows Live One Care security option, and I wondered what you guys would recommend as a good replacement for that.
Well, if you're using Windows Live One Care right now and you're happy with it, if you're at home or in a small business, I'd recommend switching over to Microsoft Security Essentials. That's actually free. If you're in a major enterprise sort of arrangement where you want to have things centrally managed, then you want to look at Microsoft Forefront. That's what OneCare has evolved into.
Okay.
So they haven't dropped the whole idea of antivirus security product. They just rearranged the marketing a little and changed the name. And I've been using Microsoft Security Essentials on a couple of machines at my house, and it seems to work really well.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Okay. I wanted to mention we had a note came across my screen relating to the Conficker virus. You say you can't. I have to explain this. Jeff, you said earlier that it means something bad in Germany. But Christoph Mai, who's our student assistant, who's working on our talk shows this morning, sent me a note saying, and he is from Germany. Actually, they do say Conficker in Germany despite its obscenity.
Okay.
Now, I'm going to have to ask him, I suppose, what it means. I don't know if he'll tell me or not, but that's just between the two of us.
I think that's probably a good plan.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to pass that along. Let's go next to Ron, who's calling from Indianola. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. I just caught the tail end of this virus thing you talked about earlier, about how long it took to download this thing. And could you explain it again?
I think we were talking about security updates and how long those would take to update or download.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, some of the security updates are fairly large. I know the QuickTime player update was about 40 megabytes, more than 40 megabytes, and on a dial-up, that's going to take a while to download. It'd be probably in the neighborhood of more than an hour, and that's unfortunate. That it's a real problem for us. If you need these kind of updates and you don't have a fast internet connection, and I know there are a lot of places in Iowa that you can't get high-speed internet unless you spend a lot of money on satellite internet. One of the things that you might be able to do if you can get access to high-speed internet at a library or something would be to download it and copy it to a USB stick and take it home that way. That's another option.
Okay, thanks for the call. We have lines open now, 866-780-9100. Jeff Ballvance, our computer consultant today on our Technology Day. Speaking of computer internet speed, I got an email recently from Mediacom, which I guess is the primary internet provider. Well, not at least the primary high-speed internet provider.
It's the cable internet provider.
The cable,
yeah.
That's what I meant, saying that they'll be offering 100 gigabyte speed. Am I saying that right? Megabyte speed.
I'll believe 100 megabyte.
Megabyte. They're going to be offering 100 megabyte for $100 a month, and they come and they have to put a new box in.
Right.
I'm thinking, that's pretty expensive.
Well, yes, that is pretty expensive. It is the kind of speeds that you're used to having in a large company. A lot of the internet outlets here on campus are 100 megabit connections, and it makes moving things around very, very easy. But yes, that's something that's been hard to do, outside large campuses. And at $100 a month, that's I got to admit, that's a pretty good deal if they
really
can actually deliver 100 megabits to your desktop.
Okay.
Many times with cable modem, what they wind up with is they give you the 100 megabit speed, but that's shared between the machines in your neighborhood.
Mm.
So you may not actually get 100 megabit throughput into that connection. But.
And there finally is, I'm not sure we talked about this last time, but the FCC is offering a speed test. It's supposed to be pretty accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And now I forgot the address, but I did try it. And I don't know whether it's accurate or not, but it was good to compare work versus home and so forth from an objective provider like the FCC.
Yeah.
At any rate, I want to mention a couple of emails, and one is from Greg. He says, "Has your university experienced any major infections with its campus network?"
Well, as far as major infection, it depends on how you define major infection. If you're saying, have we seen anything like the old days of the blaster worm where machines were constantly getting infected and basically everything on campus that wasn't patched got infected in a matter of hours, there hasn't been anything like that. Do we see infections? Do we see compromised machines? Sure. We have lots of people who spend a lot of their time cleaning those things up. So, yes, we see that. One of the reasons I think maybe he asks is that on campuses, on university campuses like this, many times, traditionally, we have not had a firewall blocking things off the internet. And, you know, in recent years, we've taken two measures. One is we are blocking things that, you know, a corporate environment would normally have done. We're blocking ports in the internet so that some types of traffic can't get through. We've also recently made available what we call the NATwork, which is NAT stands for Network Address Translation. Basically, a machine in the network looks like the kind of machine that you have at home behind your cable modem. It's given a local address that the rest of the internet can't see, and that gives it a significantly better security, and we have been offering people that service. When you connect a machine to our network, you can choose to make it a network machine rather than a network machine, and then it disappears. It has some inconveniences. It makes it harder to share files and do certain types of services, but it also makes it safer.
Larry in Alcater sends an email. You talked about defragmentation on a PC. How do you do it on a Mac?
Well, on a Mac, the journaling file system that macOS uses is not as susceptible to defragmentation. So there, you used to be able to buy utilities like the Norton utilities from Symantec had a defragmentation tool in it. To be very honest, defragmentation doesn't bother macOS anywhere near as much as it does Windows.
Okay. Good.
Because of the way the file system's done.
Talk of Iowa at iowapublicradio.org, the email address. Let's go next to Scott, who's in Ankeny. Good morning, Scott.
Yeah, good morning. I had a question in regards to, for instance, when you want to archive your photos. You know, when I pull the cards out of the camera, I obviously load them onto my computer's hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually once a week I hook up an external hard drive and I just copy that directly to the external hard drive.
Okay.
But my question is, but if the only thing we know about the hard drive in your computer is at some point in time, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when it will crash.
Exactly.
The same thing could be said of your external hard drive. And I'm wondering if what I'm currently doing makes any sense at all. I only plug it in, hook up with the USB cable long enough to copy those images that I want to save onto it. Once I'm sure that job is finished, I carefully shut the power off to the external hard drive, unplug it, and I just carefully set it on a shelf. Is that going to assure that external hard drive, number one, will last longer? And
probably.
Number two, it just probably.
Yeah,
okay.
I would say it probably will. I'm not sure that the difference will be significant, but I imagine it will be some.
Okay. Then the other question related to archiving photos is currently I'm using blank Tayo Uden DVD media, and I was wondering, at one time there was a few articles out on the internet saying that the gold layer, the gold reflective layer, and the special kind of dye was more archival than anything else. And then there were other articles to say, no, early on when they started making DVDs, which it seems like they've been around forever, but they really haven't,
right,
that the manufacturers just simply weren't sealing them very well, and they could be affected by atmospheric, or it was oxidation or whatever. Do you have any thoughts on that in terms of where we're currently at with, you know, with better quality brands of blank DVD to try to archive your images onto?
I would say that there is probably not a lot of difference between the technologies. I have seen a little bit of improvement in going to more mainline name brand manufacturers.
Sure.
But the truth of the matter is the big problem with any kind of storage, whether it's optical storage or anything, is that as a general rule, your DVD is probably not going to have a lifetime of much more than 10 years, even if you take very, very good care of it. And that is one of the headaches with digital storage of pictures and videos and so on, is that, number one, the media deteriorates, even if you do your best to avoid that. And number two, the format deteriorates. You know, down the road, How many people have the tools to read a 5 1/4 inch floppy drive? You know, eventually the time is going to come when you will have to sit down with some kind of a device or hire some kind of a service to move all of the stuff that you've got onto whatever the next generation of media will be. And so, yes, it's a problem. I don't know the good solution. I think there's a little difference between bargain basement and premium, but down the road, it's probably not going to make a lot of difference one way or another.
Okay. So coming down the road, do you think that the Blu-ray format, eventually when the prices come down a little bit, that we'll all be buying a Blu-ray burner and blank Blu-ray media and using Blu-ray? Is that kind of the replacement for the DVD right now, do you think?
I don't know at this point. Blu-ray is not catching on quickly, and it may be that something like flash memory or something that we haven't even heard about yet will replace optical discs and bypass Blu-ray altogether.
Yeah, okay. Okay, good enough.
Thanks for the call, Scott. We found a couple of floppies around the Iowa Public Radio studio here recently, and we don't know what to do with them. Don't know what they are. No, there's no.
What do we do with this? Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, they may be perfectly good floppies. It's just, you know, what do you put them in to read them?
Yeah, we don't have any computers sitting around from 10 years ago.
And that's one thing about pictures. If you really want to keep pictures around forever, the best thing to do is to get somebody to print them off onto real high quality photo paper, because they've been working for more than 100 years on making photo paper last longer.
Yeah. That's right. Greg is next from Mason City. Hi, Greg.
Hello. I was just looking at your the house call program, and it was asking if you want the 32 or 64-bit version. I've never really understood the practical significance of what that would mean to me. Could you explain that?
Well, basically, many of the new computers come with 64-bit processors.
Mine does.
Okay, if you have a 64-bit processor, then the next question is, did you buy the 64-bit version of Windows? If you did, and you can probably find that out if you go and right-click on my computer and get the properties and find out the version of Windows you have. More than likely, a lot of most machines come with the 32-bit version of Windows.
My machine is only about a year old, and it asked for it has both options, 32 or 64, and I didn't even know what I was doing. I just, on some of the stuff, I clicked on the 64, and I just don't know. Does that mean it runs faster or what?
It can. It could mean that it'll run faster and it'll use your memory better. If you have 64-bit Windows, then you should use the 64-bit version of House Call. There are some programs, especially things that dig into the system like an antivirus does, that will require that you have the right version of the stuff for it. In fact, if you run 32-bit applications, normally they'll work fine in 64-bit Windows. If it's something that doesn't, you know, I suspect if you ran the 32-bit version of House Call, it would probably complain and tell you should use the other one.
Okay, so essentially it's a matter of speed and efficiency, then, the difference between 32 and 64?
Yeah, it's a matter of speed and efficiency. You'll get better performance from the 64-bit Windows on a 64-bit machine. If you have a 32-bit machine, you won't be able to use 64-bit Windows.
I see. Thank you, then.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Let's go next to Max, who's calling from Cedar Rapids. Hi, Max. Max, are you there? Well, he's not there, so let's go to Ken. We lost Max. Let's go to Ken in Burlington. Ken, how are you? Ken, talk to me. Now, I am pressing the right buttons here. That is odd. Okay, well, let's try Gene and Carol. Gene, are you there?
I have not abandoned you.
Okay.
Great.
Thank heavens.
Yeah. So, I really enjoyed the show. Thank you very much for having it. My two quick questions were... We recently went ahead and downloaded AVG Free as our antivirus program, and the previous one. I know, you know, it's not an issue of brands here because I'm not concerned that way, but it was Bitdefender was our last one, and I found that even though it was very highly rated, we had it for a couple of years and at least in the second year, we had a lot of ended up having a lot of bugs and difficulties with it. In any case, we downloaded the AVG, and I'm noticing that actually we're getting faster connection speeds and download. And I didn't know whether we were giving up any, extra or giving up some of the antivirus capabilities, or if it's just a better designed program.
Well, part of it could be that it's a well-designed program. It's kind of an interesting comment because of what I've been hearing from AVG users is that the recent versions, version 8 and version 9, tended to be slower than the old ones. That seems to be the way of the antivirus industry right now. It's harder and harder to find things, so it takes bigger and bigger programs, larger chunks of memory and so on. AVG seems to be pretty good. I'd probably recommend if you use AVG free that you add the other tool that goes with it, and that's the AVG Link Scanner. Since the primary vector for viruses right now seems to be through your web browser, opening applications or opening pages in a web browser, AVG and McAfee and Trend Micro have all created tools that check search results and check the pages that you're going to against a database that they maintain out in the cloud, again, to verify that this is a safe place to go. And AVG Link Scanner, which is, again, available at free.avg.com, is one of those tools, and I think it's fairly good. Basically, what it does is put little flags on the search results when you go looking at Google or Bing or one of the other places and says, this is safe, this isn't safe, don't go here. And I think that's a valuable tool to add to AVG Free.
Great, and if it's a free AVG, then it's a free
yes.
application.
Yeah.
I was going to say about your other comment that it may be that the 9.0 is slower than earlier versions, but it's, it seems to be a lot faster than
Bitdefender. Okay.
The other question was real quick was. We probably bought our whole setup about in 2003, so it's been in computer terms it's ancient obviously, and we have 528 megabytes of RAM and our processor speed is 2.0, and I just started looking at newer ones, and you know of course they have much higher RAM capability and much higher speed. And dual core and quad core and so forth, but actually the articles that I've read, a lot of them have said that speed, especially when it comes to just basically downloading pages, is much more related to your connection speed and you know how good your connection is and how fast your connection is than it is to these other factors. And I wanted to ask you about that.
In many respects, that's true. If your primary application is the World Wide Web. What you do the most is grabbing information from a browser and displaying it and doing that, then in many respects your internet connection speed is more important than the speed of your computer. The truth of the matter is we've kind of come up against a wall in that faster doesn't really necessarily mean better when it comes to your computer itself. The bottleneck is how fast can I get information off the net.
Yeah, the only thing I do notice that may be different if I get a new one was that it says that often it says, you know, your virtual memory is low, so we're doing something to remedy that. But I'm assuming I'd probably see that message less if I had a higher amount of RAM.
You had more RAM, and in fact, even in your old machine, RAM's fairly inexpensive. You could add a little bit of memory to that if there's space available on the motherboard, and possibly make that a much faster, pleasanter computer to work with.
Very good. Thank you so much, and I'm glad I hung on.
I'm glad you did, too. Thanks a lot, Gene, calling from Carroll. Let's go next to Bob, who's calling from Firth in Nebraska. Good morning, Bob.
Yeah, hi. You may have answered a lot of this in previous callers. I'm very new to computing, and I mostly do my financial stock trades on a home laptop. Worked with Best Buy. I think I've been wormed already or something to that effect, and I had to spend a lot of money to cleanse the hard drive. But I also, aside from the financial stuff, which is all encrypted through a big trading establishment, I also like to do my amateur art history research, and that has been curbed a lot because I'm scared out of my wits to go to Google. I have Kaspersky 2010, and I'm even scared to go to some emails because in the art world, as you can imagine, there are borderline things in the history of the art world that can then bait in certain subjects that, sure, you know, I'm just scared to do. So I'll kind of hang up and listen. And I'm
okay,
only 9 months into computing. So should I get a second computing system?
About 45 seconds to answer.
Go ahead.
Well, Jeff.
Yeah, that's if you really want to be secure, the trick is to put your financial stuff on an isolated system. I would recommend, once again, one of the web scanners. You can look at AVG Link Scanner. It looks reasonable. The one I've been using is McAfee Site Advisor. McAfee Site Advisor is also free. AVG's is free. There's also Trend Micro's Web Protection. All of those will check the search results against their list of known evil places and give you a little more security of knowing whether or not it's safe to go there.
Jeff Ballvance, thanks so very much for all the information this hour. Really appreciate it. Jeff Ballvance is a computer consultant at Iowa State University. We thank him. Also, thanks to Christoph Mai for taking the calls, our assistant producer today on Talk of Iowa. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. Thanks for the calls. I'm Dennis Reese.